What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Happy Thursday to you. I've been asking myself an important question here recently, and I've been seeing a lot of narratives already forming regarding the 2019 Buffalo Bills and what they could be in 2020. And whenever I get these really compelling ideas, a lot of times I just want to ask somebody else questions to help shape the way I feel about it. And so with that in mind, I called on a familiar guest here on the podcast, Bruce Nolan. Bruce Nolan is the co-host of the Nick and Nolan Show, which you guys can find on the Buffalo Rumblings Podcast Network. You guys have heard him on this podcast before. He's one of my favorite people to talk football with, Buffalo Bills football with, the draft, the NFL in general. You guys can find him on Twitter at Bruce Exclusive. Bruce, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks for having me, Joe. It's always a good time, and I'm ready to get in the weeds on this one.
Yeah, get into the weeds on Thursdays. That's what we do. And if you guys were with us about 25 seconds prior to this starting, you guys would have heard me butcher the introduction thinking that I was going to do a comprehensive primer. We had to redo it because I am still in the mode of doing games, but it is the off season, and so it's time to shift the way we do this podcast and the shows that come each day. So, Bruce, thanks for joining me. One thing I do want to mention here before we get into our topic for today is, as you guys may have seen on social media, my wife and I are expecting a baby that is due at some point this month. And so the podcast must go on. And so in my absence, Bruce has kindly agreed to fill in. And so as a somewhat of an introduction here to you as the substitute host of this podcast, and for to let everyone know kind of the plan with that, and it'd be a good way for everyone to make sure they know who you are here when you fill in here for a couple of days. So thanks for doing that again, Bruce.
Well, thanks for letting me do it. It's a great time. It's going to be a fun opportunity for me to interact with listeners who I don't normally have the opportunity to interact with. And I will give my best Diet Joe Marino impression. It's, you know, like Joe Marino, only half the calories. Yeah. And, you know, it's not quite the same, but I'm going to do my best to try and just keep the ship afloat while you're gone.
Now, I'm looking forward to listening to those podcasts. All right. So that's for another day. Today is about some narratives that I think are going to shape here this offseason, some that you've already seen. And we've already seen these comparisons made between this 2019 Buffalo Bills teams and the 2017 Jaguars and the 2018 Bears. Many perceived those as teams that overachieved and had outlier seasons, with the Jags and Bears experiencing quite the regression the following year. Now, we don't know what 2020 holds for the Buffalo Bills, but I'm guessing it's going to be popular for many people to believe that a similar regression is coming. Now, obviously, we have an entire offseason of roster construction ahead that will heavily impact the results next season, and we don't know what those moves are. But with all of that in mind, Bruce, what is your general response to the comparison of the 2019 Bills to the 2017 Jags and the 2018 Chicago Bears?
I think on a surface level, those comparisons make sense. You think really strong defense who carries the team. You think young quarterback who has a tendency to be high variance, and they make the playoffs. They're competitive. They didn't necessarily always perform up to expectations. Maybe they had some teams they probably should have beaten that they lost to. They may have struggled in specific games that we think they should have overachieved in. I understand on the surface why those comparisons are being made. But when you dive a little deeper, there starts to be a little bit of a crack in that narrative. And to do that, I need to break down those two teams, the 17 Jags and the 18 Bears, and split it into two parts. The first part being, why were they good? And the second part being, why did they regress? And what we're going to do is we're going to line those up with where the 2019 Bills are. The 2017 Jags and the 2018 Bears and the 2019 Bills all made significant free agent acquisitions prior to the season. 2017 Jags brought in A.J. Bouye. They brought in Calais Campbell. The 2018 Bears traded for Khalil Mack. They brought in Allen Robinson and Taylor Gabriel. The 2019 Bills basically rebuilt their entire offense. And while they may not have had a significant free agent signing that broke the bank, Mitch Morse was the highest paid center, but it's not an impact position. It's not a sexy position. It didn't move the needle for a lot of people, but the significant free agent acquisition was made. So there's a common theme there. In addition, they were all three teams that were led by their defense. The 2017 Jags, 2018 Bears, led by their defense. 2019 Bills, led by their defense. So I get it. Here's where the things start to get a little strange. The 2017 Jaguars were top two in the league in forced fumbles, completion percentage against, passing yards, passer rating against, defensive touchdowns, defensive sacks, interceptions, takeaways, yards, points against, all that stuff. Their defense was top two in the league and all that stuff. The 2018 Bears were number one in the league in points against, turnovers forced, interceptions, interceptions for touchdowns, passer rating against, rushing yards against. These were elite, historical, staggering level defenses for the 2017 Jags and the 2018 Bears. The Bills' defense was good. It wasn't that good. So being carried by the Bills' defense is a little bit different than being carried by the 2017 Jags and the 2018 Bears. The 2019 Bills had a very good defense, and I think we could agree they led the team. However, they weren't on that historic level. So we're starting from a different high, first off, where it comes to that. Then you move over to the regression side of this question. Why did they regress? What happened in 2018 for the Jags? What happened in 2019 for the Bears? Here's the thing. The defenses didn't suddenly suck overnight. That's not what happened. The biggest drop-off and the biggest connection is that the defense regressed unbelievably significantly in turnovers. They went to 22nd in the league on both cases. The Jaguars in 2018, 22nd in the league. The 18 Bears going to 19 regressed to 22nd in the league in turnovers. They were still good in points. The 18 Jags were fourth in points and fifth in yards. The 19 Bears were eighth in points and fourth in yards. It wasn't like these defenses went from historic to terrible. They just went from historic to good. And the problem is those turnovers dropped through the floor. Turnovers, historically speaking, are a little bit more random. They're harder to predict, especially the way that the ball bounces on a fumbles. Defensive touchdowns are very random. You can have a team that leads in defensive touchdowns, almost never leads in defensive touchdowns the next year. It's not something that's easy to predict. They were getting a lot of their dominance from unexpected and unstable places. That's a big part of why they regressed, because the defenses were still good, but they weren't scoring points for you. Any fantasy player who had the 2017 Jags defense or the 2018 defense for the Bears will tell you that they probably didn't draft them the next year, because fantasy players actually know that defenses don't have a tendency to carry over year to year when it comes to fantasy points scored, because defensive touchdowns are such a huge thing when it comes to that. So they regressed due to something that the 2019 Bills were not overly great at. They were 10th in turnovers, the 2019 Bills. They weren't scoring defensive touchdowns in bunches. This is where the regression starts to kind of part a little bit, because the Jags and the Bears just stopped getting a ton of points on defense from their teams. They stopped putting their offense in unbelievably advantageous positions. That was the biggest change. The quarterbacks absolutely regressed, but that wasn't the biggest drop-off. The biggest drop-off was historic-level defenses that were scoring points and putting their team in unbelievably positive field positions to just not doing it at the same level they were because it was unsustainable. That's where the starts to kind of depart. The Red Sea sort of starts to part on this narrative when it comes to the 17 Jags, the 18 Bears, and the 2019 Bills.
So, Bruce, the first thing that I take away from that is, well, wow, I hope the Bills defense doesn't regress, because if those defenses started at a higher level, and the Bills defense we all think is really good, maybe not elite like those ones, how can we make sure that the defense doesn't get worse? And if it does, how does that apply to the Bills?
The thing that's a silver lining for the Bills is that the Bills defense isn't good and isn't carrying the team because of their turnover ratio. their turnover ratio has never been ridiculously high. We've never, under Sean McDermott, the Bills defense has never created massive amounts of turnovers. That's not what the defense is built on. It's not built on scoring on defense. It's built on playing solid, sound technical coverage, usually in zone, and making the right play. And because of that, there's a lot more chance for carryover year to year in that positive defense than there is year to year in a defense that makes its living doing something else. So the probability right off the bat of the Bills defense regressing is lower than the probability of the 17 Jags and the 18 Bears defense regressing because the method by which they were dominating. But in addition to that, how can we keep that from happening? We need to make sure that we have free agents and draftees ready to plug a couple important holes on that defensive line, specifically Jordan Phillips, Shaq Lawson. These are the things they need to make sure we keep level to be able to make sure that, hey, you know what? We don't have to be anything we're not here. We just have to not try and be the Bears, not try and be the Jaguars. The defense has been significantly consistent. And a lot of people say defense doesn't carry over year to year, but it's been consistent because the method by which they've achieved it is not something that's subject to high variance.
Is there anything, when you look at the quarterback play from all of those teams, Mitch Trubisky, Blake Bortles, and now Josh Allen in this discussion, people are going to tell you that Josh Allen had the same season as Mitch Trubisky did in 2018, and look at where Mitch is now, and look at Blake Bortles, who had a really odd season in 2017, and now he's a backup quarterback for the Rams. And so where do you fit Josh Allen into that discussion as part of the regression or the reason you believe they won't regress?
One of the reasons I believe that it's less likely for regression, I absolutely understand the idea that there's going to be regression, and the comparisons aren't ridiculous for that. You have athletic quarterbacks who came out raw, who are inexperienced at a high level. You know, Mitch Trubisky came out starting very few games at UNC. You know, Blake Bortles came from a school where he didn't necessarily play top competition all the time. And so I understand why there's a comparison there. The difference is the 2017 Jags made their opportunity on offense. They decided to invest a high pick in Leonard Fournette. They built around that running game. They did what they had to do to build an elite offense. It just didn't happen. The 2018 Bears signed Allen Robinson and said, hey, we're going to get that dominant number one, that alpha wide receiver. They already went all in on their quarterbacks. The Bills haven't done that yet. The Bills just went from historically bad to okay on offense. We haven't even done the significant, okay, we're all in on Josh Allen. We're giving him everything that he needs to be successful. And now it's on him to sink or swim. The Jaguars did it with Bortles. I mean, the Bears did it with Trubisky. They put all their chips in the middle of the table and they said, hey, you're our guy, sink or swim, and they sank. The Bills haven't done that with Josh Allen yet. The Bills just said, hey, we're really sorry that we sagged you with the absolute historically terrible offensive line and weapons. Here's a big free agent kind of sweeping changes just to get you back to zero. We haven't even started to add weapons. We're just going to get you back to not terrible. And so that, I think, is an important thing to theorize. They still have $90 million. It's not like we're up against the cap. We still have 9 draft picks. We didn't already sacrifice the future and now are relying on the jump from the quarterback to take the next step as a team. That's the difference. They needed Trubisky to take the next step here this year for the Bears, and he didn't. They needed Bortles to take the next step, and he didn't. I'm not saying we don't need Josh Allen to take the next step. I'm saying we still have their assets to be able to help him take the next step. We haven't blown them all yet.
Love that answer. So the NFL, a lot of parity in the NFL. Over the last 30 years, every season for the last 30 years, the NFL has seen at least 4 new playoff teams, which means 4 teams that made the playoffs the previous season did not return. I think that if people are going to predict teams that made the playoffs this year to not come back, I think Buffalo is going to be a popular choice. How does everything we've talked about so far, and your answer really when you dug into the Bears and Jags, how does that impact your perception of the team coming out of 2019?
I think it's completely reasonable for people to think that. There was a lot of discussion about, you know, cupcake schedule and things like that this year. And I think it'll be popular, and I think it'll be popular for a very logical reason as to why the Bills wouldn't make it back to the playoffs in 2020. And the schedule on paper right now looks more difficult. But going into this year, the schedule looked completely different. We thought the Steelers were going to be, you know, Big Ben and Juju, and we're going to hit the ground running, and everything's going to be great. We thought the Patriots would be a lot more powerhouse than they were. Now, we ended up losing to them twice anyway, even though they weren't as much of a powerhouse as we thought. We thought, a lot of people did anyway, that the Jets would be the number two team in the AFC East, not the Bills. And that didn't end up happening at all. So people's perception of that stuff has a lot to do with schedules, and I just don't know that that's really something you can go off of. I understand why they're going to do it, because the reasons why we got in this year were not quite as convincing as the reasons why other teams got in this year. And I understand that. That's fine. And I think if we would have beaten the Texans, that probably would have shifted some of that narrative. And unfortunately, when you don't win a wild card game, there's going to be narratives as to whether or not you belong to be there. We clearly belong to be there, and we had a collapse that hurt that, and that's okay. But my perception of the team going into next year is that if you have an investment in the team similar to your investment in the team from the 18 to the 19 seasons, there's no reason why this team couldn't do it again.
So let's get into staying power in the Buffalo Bills. And now the Bills have made the playoffs two of the last three seasons. Of course, one and done on both occasions. When you think about this team moving forward, what are the three most critical factors in the Bills remaining competitive or sustaining success, as McDermott has preached from day one, in terms of what his goal is to build in Buffalo?
The first one is obvious, and it's Josh Allen taking a step. Now, we wanted Josh Allen to take a leap this year. I would argue he didn't take a leap, he took a step. But if he were to take a step equivalent to the step he took this year, again next year, that will help offset any potential regression concerns that would have drawn him further comparisons to Mitch Trubisky or Blake Bortles. With that in mind, the team needs to ID the appropriate help, which is different than last year. Last year, it's let's get him help, period. It's a historically bad offense. It's a terrible offensive line. They're weapons that don't fit. They're receivers who aren't even on an NFL squad right now. Let's get this guy something. And we did, and that's great. Now it's different. Now it's about identifying the appropriate help. What does Josh Allen do well? What does Josh Allen need to work on? What is it that the team can do to build something around him that can facilitate his next step movement? The second thing is don't allow for the potential defensive regression. We talked about this earlier. Make sure you don't stay, next man up for Jordan Phillips and for Shaq Lawson. If Trent Murphy is your starting left defensive end when the 2020 season opener comes in, you have opened the door for potential regression on the defense, which then further creates more opportunity for you to go down the same narrative hole that you had with the Bears and with the Jaguars. The third thing is that Sean McDermott needs to continue to evolve as a game day coach. We saw that from 17 to 18. In 17, he made a fireable offense by punting and playing for a tie in a snow game where you absolutely could not afford to tie or you were going to be out of the playoffs. I have every confidence that if McDermott were to do that right now, he would not make that call again because he's evolved. The Bills were the second most aggressive team on fourth down in the NFL next to the Baltimore Ravens. And when questioned about it at a postgame press conference, Sean McDermott said the analytics say it's a good idea to go for two in that situation. That is a staggering leap forward for a particularly old school style coach. He needs to continue to progress as a game day coach with clock management and with knowing when to be aggressive, knowing when to not be aggressive. And those three things can stave off the potential regression.
So you identified three things here, and I want to ask you kind of what's your confidence level in those things being true kind of one by one here. The first thing you said, Josh Allen taking a step forward. What is your belief that that will happen?
55% sure. I am more sure that it will happen than it won't because I've seen him do it before. And I think that the team knows architecturally how to build something around him to increase the likelihood of that happening.
You said Josh took a step from 18 to 19, not a leap. Would you say Josh from 2017 at Wyoming to the quarterback you watched for the Buffalo Bills this year, do you think that was a leap?
Absolutely. I don't even think it's the same player.
Right.
I went back and I watched the Iowa game.
Yeah.
The Iowa game specifically, and I thought this is not the same player.
Yeah.
This, you know, I was feeling really pretty bad about myself when Josh Allen takes a step forward so significantly it makes your draft evaluation look kind of dumb. So I went back and I looked at him and I thought, gosh, you know, did I miss something? And I put on the Iowa game and I was like, no, he looked like John Skelton. No, I still feel good about that comp coming out. But he has leapt at this point. So the steps he took from his rookie year to the middle of his second year is significant. The step he took from his rookie year to now is fairly significant. The step he took from college to now is basically like running a mile.
All right, so the next – and by the way, I did the same thing. I went back and watched some of those college games from Josh at Wyoming, and I think it's healthy for a lot of people to do that. If you're questioning where Josh Allen's at, go watch his Wyoming tape, and I think that will help shape your perception of him. The next thing you said was that the Bills could not allow for a defensive regression. What is your confidence level in the defense not regressing next season?
75%. I am very sure because – I've seen it not regress and get stabilized with different personnel now with 3 years of Sean McDermott. I've seen the idea where we've gotten a little bit better at certain things. And the other reason is exactly what I said earlier. I do not think that this defense is built on something that is as high variance as turnovers. And as such, I don't think it has the levels of lows that a defense that is built on forcing massive amounts of negative plays, but giving tons of yards up inside it, or basing your entire defense around the fact that you've got to get these negative plays, these huge game-changing negative plays, and if you don't get them, you're toast. That's not really the type of defense the Bills have, which I think has staying power.
The third thing you said was Sean McDermott evolving as a game day coach. Your belief that that can happen next season?
40%. I think he can evolve a little bit, but Sean McDermott, I think, has bumpers built up in his mind as far as certain things that are hard, fast rules that are foundational tenets. I think he's an open-minded guy, but I think there are enough foundational tenets in Sean McDermott that he's simply not willing to change that might hinder his ability to be able to do things like that. We've seen some stubbornness out of Sean McDermott when it comes to personnel decisions and making sure that, you know, every time the Bills were backed up in their own end zone, they hand the ball to Frank Gore.
Yeah.
Every time. Because Sean McDermott trusts him not to fumble the ball. And so no matter how many times Devin Singletary proved that he's the player more likely to get you out of harm's way if you're backed up, Sean McDermott was more worried about not making it worse. And that's an example of the type of thing that is not necessarily good or bad. It's just a foundational principle that I think limits his ability to indefinitely improve. He can absolutely do that. He has the growth mindset, like he said. He has that. I think there are limits to that. And so while I think it's possible, I wouldn't go as far as to say I think it's probable.
I don't want to go down a rabbit hole here, but what you said there prompted me to think about the 2017 Bills, Rick Dennison, Mike Tolbert, and using him on outside runs because it was his turn to carry the football. And I've been asked a lot about Sean McDermott and his role with the offense, and if he just chooses to let his offensive coordinator be the CEO of the offense and he's more hands-off, what do you think his role is? Do you think he's responsible for stuff like that? Is he responsible for that Frank Gore handoff at the end of regulation there when the Bills had a chance to get closer for the field goal. I mean, more I think about it, I'm starting to really wonder, like, maybe Sean needs to be more involved, or is that his fault?
I think that if you watch him over the last 3 years, you can start to see some things where you start to feel his presence philosophically in what the offense is doing. I think that, you know, Brian Daboll said when they decided to sit on the ball with a minute 50 left to go and timeouts at the end of the first half a couple games ago, he said, you know, Sean and I talked and we decided that it was better to just get out there, right? That, I think, I think that's code for Sean McDermott saying, hey, philosophically, I don't want to be aggressive here. I just want to sit on this. I want to get into half. I want to do that. Well, philosophically, I don't want to lose the ball here is also a big part of that. So when we're back down deep in the end zone and we're on the ball, we got our ball on our own 3-yard line, I don't think that Dable's deciding, hey, I want to make sure Frank Gore's in all three of these downs here. He may be calling the plays for sure. And I don't think Sean McDermott is probably micromanaging him to the level of that, because it's not part of his coaching DNA to micromanage like that. However, philosophically, Sean McDermott was absolutely capable. And I wouldn't go as necessarily probable, because you and I, there's no way for us to exactly know. But it seems to track that Sean McDermott would get in his ear and go, hey, I don't want to lose the ball here. Make sure Frank's in. Yeah. That doesn't seem unreasonable to me based on what we know about Sean McDermott. Because anytime they're in 4-minute offense, Frank's in the entire time. Anytime they're backed up in their own end zone, Frank's in. Anytime the goal of the play is to either bleed clock or don't fumble, Frank Gore's in. That's not a Brian Daboll decision by any means. That's got to be a Sean McDermott-led concept, because it's a philosophy. It's not about a personnel grouping or a specific play or a specific pass concept. It's about a philosophy. And I think there's some philosophical manipulation there, because the head coach, by definition, should. And I think Sean McDermott believes in having that kind of influence over his offense and his defense.
I want to close things out with a move the meter segment here. And I don't envy you being in the hot seat for this, because some of the stuff I'm going to tell you, you don't know what the effect of that is, right? Like, you don't know what the repercussions of this thing being true is. So I think it's important for the listeners to know that, and for me to at least say, sorry, man, but I'm putting you in the spot. So given the unknowns that will shape the 2020 season for the Bills, I want to give you some things here that could happen over this offseason, and you tell me how they move the meter in the Bills experiencing or not experiencing a regression next season. So move the meter in terms of, if this happens, does it move the meter in it being more likely that the Bills experience regression in 2020? The first thing is, Brian Daboll gets a head coaching job.
More likely to experience regression.
That is going to be, yeah, go ahead. You got to say something else there.
for a brief second, I thought, no, I'm just going to leave it there. No, I don't think I really can. I think that continuity for Josh Allen is really important right now. I do not think an offensive coordinator change is the cure to what ails Josh Allen. I don't think that, you know, it's a quick fix with any of those things. I think that with Allen's specific weaknesses, familiarity is one of the best cures for what ails him. And so I think it would be a net negative to the Bills. And that therefore, I think it would be a net increase to their chance of regression if Brian Daboll left.
Did you hear this? Whatever game Chris Collinsworth called over the weekend watching playoff games, he said something along the lines of, you know, the Bills went out and brought in basically 9 new pieces. We know it's more than that, but 9 new starters around Josh Allen going into his second season, and all of a sudden Josh Allen knew more about the playbook than anyone on the offense, and that really helped him become a leader and gain the respect of some of those guys, because he was one of the smartest players on the team when it comes to knowing the offense. I don't think that was something that Brandon Bean was intentionally thinking about, but do you think that speaks something to the importance of continuity even more?
Absolutely, I do. And I think that Josh Allen looking in the pocket and knowing where he needs to go calms some of the issues that you sometimes see from Josh Allen. Josh Allen has a tendency to get a little frantic. He has a tendency to panic when he doesn't know what he's looking at. And the times when Josh Allen has looked the best this year, think about the Cowboys game, which I would argue is the best game of his career.
Yeah.
The times he is the best is the times when he is the calmest. So he's had some great games that have been frantic. The Miami games last year were frantic. There's some games where frantic Josh, I call him YOLO Josh, right? There is an opportunity for that to be spectacular. But his best game was not his most frantic game. His best game was his calmest game. How do we get the calmest Josh more often? And the answer is familiarity.
The last thing Josh Allen needs to do this offense offseason is learn a new offense.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's that simple. It's the last thing he needs to be thinking about is learning an entirely new offense. You like him, Dable, or you don't. I think it's bad for Josh Allen if he's gone. All right, the rest of this should move a little faster. This one's interesting because I don't think it will happen, but maybe it should be a bigger consideration for teams around the league. Leslie Frazier gets a head coaching job.
Slightly increased likelihood for regression at that point.
Okay. Jordan Phillips walks.
No impact on potential regression.
I think we see eye to eye on Jordan Phillips. 9.5 sacks is a great number, but from a snap-to-snap basis, I don't think he's that good.
I think that Jordan Phillips might have been our worst interior run defender, including the guy we picked up off the street in Corey Legit.
Yeah.
The times when Legit and Jordan Phillips and Trent Murphy were all three on the field at the same time, I was just praying they weren't going to run the ball.
Shaq Lawson walks.
No impact on our potential regression. Shaq Lawson is a better player than Jordan Phillips. He gives you more snap to snap as far as consistency goes, as far as his ability to play the pass and play the run. However, I think he can be replaced in free agency. I think he can be replaced in the draft. I think it can be done. Shaq Lawson took a step forward this year, but he didn't take a step forward to a player who is so impactful that his loss in and of itself would impact the team enough to be able to generate regression.
If I'm an AFC North team, I'm signing Shaq Lawson for the way he played in that Baltimore game.
Shaq Lawson's length and his ability to move laterally against the zone read.
Yeah.
He's the anti-Lamar Jackson. Let's do it.
Yeah. You got to get him. If I'm the Browns, the Bengals, or who is the other, the Steelers. I'm going to find a way to get Shaq Lawson just based on that game tape. All right, Quentin Spain walks, starting left guard.
Slightly increased likelihood of regression.
So you just told me that Quentin Spain's the most important of those three free agents.
I would agree with that.
You think Kevin Johnson's the most important free agent, if I'm not mistaken.
I do. Not because the reason why Kevin Johnson's number two is because I don't trust Levi Wallace or Taron Johnson to stay healthy. And so I think you go very quickly from having four reasonable cornerbacks in Trey White, Kevin Johnson, Taron Johnson, and Levi Wallace. That can very, very quickly be whittled down to one. If Kevin Johnson leaves this offseason, Taron Johnson is not someone I trust to stay healthy year-round. And Levi Wallace had his snaps reduced and has a very, very, very slight frame. I worry about those things very, very quickly eating up our cornerback depth. Kevin Johnson, I know, has historically struggled with injuries, but he didn't struggle this year. We did a good job of managing his snaps. And I think people are suffering from a little bit of recency bias when it comes to the Texans game, where he didn't have his best game ever, but he didn't get obliterated like people think he did. And in addition, I don't want cornerback two, which I think is a really important part of this defense, to just all of a sudden go from being a position of strength this offseason where we had EJ Gaines and Kevin Johnson and a wealth of a bounty of cornerbacks at that point, to all of a sudden being a very significant deal where we absolutely have to draft a cornerback now because we let Kevin Johnson walk. We're not sure about Taron Johnson. Saron Neal, we like him, but we don't, he's a special teams player. We don't want to overcommit him to defense. I don't want that to happen. In addition, I think Cody Ford is a guard. I still do. So if Quentin Spain walks, I don't want him to walk, but if he walks, maybe it opens the door for there to be a move inside. So that's the thing that separates, in my opinion, Kevin Johnson at number one from Quentin Spain with number two.
Yeah, good perspective there. A couple more to get to here. The Bills commit big money to Yannick Ngakoue, Jadeveon Clowney, or Matt Judon. Those are all some of the biggest named edge defenders that are potentially available in this free agency period for those that don't know those players.
Notably decreases likelihood of regression. One of the things that the Bills were really missing this year was an impact pass rusher who you had to fear and game plan around. The Bills were able to generate pressure, and it was great through scheme and blitzing the double A gap and having Matt Milano and Tremaine Edmonds blitz more than they've ever blitzed in their lives really, really helped. Saron Neal coming off the edge against the Texans really helped. If he could tackle, it would be help even more. But I think having that feared impact pass rusher, much more so Yannick Ngakoue than the other two, but having the feared pass rusher would allow the Bills to actually push forward the narrative that you and I have been talking about. The 2018 Bears got Khalil Mack and then had their big year and then regressed. If we go out and get Yannick Ngakoue, we're actually pushing this narrative back a year, which is actually kind of ironic.
Yeah.
So I think it would notably decrease the opportunity for regression. You have to be careful about who you give money to because the Bills have some checks to write. But just in regards to how this moves the meter for me on regression, notably decrease.
Do you stack those up in any particular order?
Yes. Ngakoue, Judon, Clowney in that order.
I agree with you 100%. I'm really nervous about Clowney's medical history and the amount of money he's going to command. I don't know if I'd do it. I don't think I'd do it.
I actually tweeted out his entire medical history last year.
There's only a 280 character limit, Bruce. I mean,
yeah, it took me multiple tweets to do it. And it will now, I wonder if I've crossed the threshold from multiple tweets into, hey, I need to announce that I'm doing a thread. Kind of like when it gets to a certain point, you have to tell people, hey, just so you know, you're in for a little something now. I think we might be at that point with Jadeveon Clowney's injury history. Not the kind of person I want to give massive guarantees to, but Yannick Ngakoue, young, checks all the boxes, productive, high motor. The tape is there. The scheme is there. Everything we need from him, boxes checked. Judon comes from a little bit of a different scheme. But, again, young, productive. He has the things going for him. Both of those people I am more comfortable giving big money to than Jadeveon Clowney.
All right, the Bills sign A.J. Green.
Slightly decreases the chance of regression for the Bills. I think AJ Green is a good player, and actually think that right there is a different answer than I probably would have given you before the Texans game. I came out of the Texans game with the biggest optimism going, look at Josh Allen's willingness to throw to Duke Williams. That was one of my biggest takeaways. And I think it's a wonderfully positive spin that really we should be talking about more, because coming into the year, the narrative was we were talking about Duke Williams versus Isaiah McKenzie for that last wide receiver six spot potentially. And we said, oh gosh, you know, Josh Allen didn't do too great with Kelvin, you know, with Kelvin Benjamin. He didn't do too great with Andre Holmes. Maybe he just isn't comfortable throwing to that type of player. The player who excels at contested catches. Obviously AJ Green is 4,000 times the player that any of the three previously mentioned receivers are, but specifically the type of ball that you're getting the big benefit from getting AJ Green, is Allen willing to throw it? And the answer is yes, he's willing to throw it. Duke Williams had somebody hanging all over him. Josh Allen looked at it and said, I can make that throw. And he went ahead and did it. And if that throw is to AJ Green, there's a higher probability he's going to catch it. So AJ Green is now, as far as I'm concerned, on the table stylistically. My big concern, the reason why it doesn't move the needle to me as much as the defensive ends move them, is injury history. Foot injuries make me nervous as ever live and get out. Sammy Watkins is still not right from his foot injuries. And AJ Green concerns me greatly when it comes to the foot injuries. And that's the reason why I'm not willing to jump up and down and pound the table to do it.
All right, last one for you here. And you and I kind of agreed that we should maybe do an entire podcast in February or March or something like that, where we get more specific into some of the draft prospects, but I want to give you one here to close out the show. And this is the guy that I feel like I'm asked about the most. We see him mocked to the Bills quite a bit. There seems to be this kind of belief that there's a natural fit. And that player is Laviska Shenault. So move the meter. The Bills land Laviska Shenault in the NFL draft.
Slightly decrease the chance of regression. Yes, he's a rookie, but he's the type of rookie where you can find a role for him early on. And Brian Daboll has done a pretty good job thus far of finding roles for people who have skill sets while they develop. It's one of those scenarios where we found a role for Devin Singletary until we were ready to turn over the wheels to him before he got hurt and we turned over. Even in the first game, when Frank Gore was still the bell cow with the outside runs where we were getting into space, we were pulling Mitch Morse, all those runs were handled by Devin Singletary. He correctly identified, hey, this is something this guy does well. While he's getting his feet wet, let's make sure we put him in positions to get comfortable and be confident. Laviska Shenault's someone who needs to work on some of the fine-tuning things about being an NFL receiver. But his ability in the short screen game, his ability to play in the slot, his ability to do the things that could potentially give him a day one role on this team, I think moves the needle for this offense. It also happens to be moving the needle in a method that would help Josh Allen fill a gap in his particular skill set now. So I think he could have an impact.
Yeah, you know, and he's a guy that has some foot problems. He had going into this past season, he had labrum surgery and surgery for turf toe. So not to scare you on Laviska Shenault, but he's definitely not clean when it comes to the medical side of things. Bruce, thanks for being generous with your time. Thanks for delivering an awesome podcast and giving me the insight that I was hoping for when I thought about doing this with you. So always a pleasure talking football with you. And you're certainly going to be talking to the listeners here again this month, and I'm sure you'll be a familiar voice on this podcast throughout the off season, as long as you'll keep saying yes.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you having me. Thanks so much.
All right, you guys can find Bruce on Twitter at Bruce Exclusive. Again, make sure you are checking out the Nick and Nolan Show on the Buffalo Rumblings Podcast Network. For now, it drops every single Wednesday. It's a priority of my week to listen to, so make sure you don't miss it. Hit that subscribe button, just like you do here on Locked On Bills, to the Buffalo Rumblings Podcast feed. That way you guys will not miss Bruce and Nick Badalana on the Nick and Nolan Show as part of the Buffalo Rumblings Podcast Network. I'll be back again for you guys tomorrow. Thanks so much for listening.